Chapter 27, Post-War America, 1945 to 1960. Why it matters. After World War II, the country enjoyed a period of economic prosperity. Many more Americans could now aspire to a middle-class lifestyle, with a house in the suburbs and more leisure time. Television became a favorite form of entertainment. This general prosperity, however, did not extend to many Hispanics, African Americans, Native Americans, or people in Appalachia. The impact today. The effects of this era can still be seen. The middle class represents a large segment of the American population. Television is a popular form of entertainment for many Americans. Section 1. Truman and Eisenhower. An American Story. As World War II ended, Robert Eubanks was worried as he prepared for his discharge from the Army. He had joined the Army because, as an African American, it was hard for him to find a job that paid well. Then he heard about something known as the GI Bill, a government program that paid veterans tuition for college and provided a living allowance. Eubanks took advantage of the program and enrolled at the Illinois Institute of Technology. He earned 3 degrees on the GI Bill and eventually became a professor at the University of Illinois. Years later, Eubanks recalled how his life was changed by the bill. "It's very hard to explain how things were during the 1940s," he said. "The restrictions on blacks then were rough. The GI Bill gave me my start on being a professional instead of a stock clerk." Adapted from When Dreams Came True. Return to a peacetime economy. After the war, many Americans feared the return to a peacetime economy. They worried that after military production halted and millions of former soldiers glutted the labor market, unemployment and recession might sweep the country. Despite such worries, the economy continued to grow after the war as increased consumer spending helped ward off a recession. After 17 years of economic depression and wartime shortages, Americans rushed out to buy the luxury goods they had long desired. The Servicemen's Readjustment Act, popularly called the GI Bill, further boosted the economy. The act provided generous loans to veterans to help them establish businesses, buy homes, and attend college. Inflation and strikes. The post-war economy was not without its problems. A greater demand for goods led to higher prices, and this rising inflation soon triggered labor unrest. As the cost of living rose, workers across the country went on strike for better pay. Work stoppages soon affected the automobile, electrical steel, and mining industries. Afraid that the nation's energy supply would be drastically reduced because of the striking miners, President Truman forced the miners to return to work after one strike that had lasted over a month. Truman ordered government seizure of the mines while pressuring mine owners to grant the union most of its demands. The president also halted a strike that shut down the nation's railroads by threatening to use the army to run the trains. Republican victory. Labor unrest and high prices prompted many Americans to call for a change. The Republicans seized upon these sentiments during the 1946 congressional elections, winning control of both houses of Congress for the first time since 1930. Disgusted with the rash of strikes that was crippling the nation, the new conservative Congress quickly set out to curb the power of organized labor. Legislators proposed a measure known as the Taft-Hartley Act, which outlawed the closed shop or the practice of forcing business owners to hire only union members. Under the law, states could pass right-to-work laws, which outlawed union shops, shops in which new workers were required to join the union. The measure also prohibited featherbedding, the practice of limiting work output in order to create more jobs. Furthermore, the bill forbade unions from using their money to support political campaigns. When the bill reached Truman, however, he vetoed it, arguing, "It would reverse the basic direction of our national labor policy, inject the government into private economic affairs on an unprecedented scale, and conflict with important principles of our democratic society. Its provisions would cause more strikes, not fewer." Quoted in The Growth of the American Republic. The president's concerns did little to sway Congress, which passed the Taft-Hartley Act in 1947 over Truman's veto. Its supporters claimed the law held irresponsible unions in check, just as the Wagner Act of 1935 had restrained anti-union activities and employers. Labor leaders called the act a slave labor law and insisted that it erased many of the gains that unions had made since 1933. Reading check. Explaining. Why did Truman veto the Taft-Hartley Act? Truman's domestic program. The Democratic Party's loss of members in the 1946 elections did not dampen President Truman's spirits or his plans. Shortly after taking office, Truman had proposed a series of domestic measures that sought to continue the work done as part of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal. During his tenure in office, Truman worked to push his agenda through Congress. Truman's legislative agenda. Truman's proposals included the expansion of Social Security benefits, the raising of the legal minimum wage from 40 cents to 65 cents an hour, a program to ensure full employment through aggressive use of federal spending and investment, public housing and slum clearance, long-range environmental and public works planning, and a system of national health insurance. Truman also boldly asked Congress in February 1948 to pass a broad civil rights bill that would protect African Americans' right to vote, abolish poll taxes, and make lynching a federal crime. He also issued an executive order barring discrimination in federal employment, and he ended segregation in the armed forces. Most of Truman's legislative efforts, however, met with little success, as a coalition of Republicans and conservative Southern Democrats defeated many of his proposals. While these defeats angered Truman, the president soon had to worry about other matters. The election of 1948. As the presidential election of 1948 approached, most observers gave Truman little chance of winning. Some Americans still believed that he lacked the stature for the job, and they viewed his administration as weak and inept. Divisions within the Democratic Party also seemed to spell disaster for Truman. At the Democratic convention that summer, two factions abandoned the party altogether. Reacting angrily to Truman's support of civil rights, a group of Southern Democrats formed the States' Rights, or Dixiecrat Party, and nominated South Carolina Governor Strom Thurmond for president. At the same time, the party's more liberal members were frustrated by Truman's ineffective domestic policies and critical of his anti-Soviet foreign policy. They formed a new Progressive Party, with Henry A. Wallace as their presidential candidate. In addition, the president's Republican opponent was New York Governor Thomas Dewey, a dignified and popular candidate who seemed unbeatable. After polling 50 political writers, Newsweek magazine declared 3 weeks before the election, "The landslide for Dewey will sweep the country." Perhaps the only one who gave Truman a chance to win was Truman himself. "I know every one of those 50 fellows," he declared about the writers polled in Newsweek. "There isn't one of them that has enough sense to pound sand in a rat hole." Ignoring the polls, the feisty president poured his efforts into an energetic campaign. He traveled more than 20,000 miles by train and made more than 350 speeches. Along the way, Truman attacked the majority Republican Congress as do-nothing, good-for-nothing, for refusing to enact his legislative agenda. Truman's attacks on the do-nothing Congress did not mention that both he and Congress had been very busy dealing with foreign policy matters. Congress had passed the Truman Doctrine's aid program to Greece and Turkey, as well as the Marshall Plan. It also created the Department of Defense and the CIA and established the Joint Chiefs of Staff as a permanent organization. The 80th Congress, therefore, did not do nothing, as Truman charged, but its accomplishments were in areas that did not affect most Americans directly. As a result, Truman's charges began to stick, and to the surprise of almost everyone, his efforts paid off. With a great deal of support from laborers, African Americans, and farmers, Truman won a narrow but stunning victory over Dewey. Perhaps just as remarkable as the president's victory was the resurgence of the Democratic Party. When the dust had cleared after Election Day, Democrats had regained control of both houses of Congress. Government. The Fair Deal. Truman's State of the Union message to the new Congress repeated the domestic agenda he had put forth previously. Every segment of our population and every individual, he declared, has a right to expect from government a fair deal. Whether intentional or not, the president had coined a name, the Fair Deal, to set his program apart from the New Deal. The 81st Congress did not completely embrace Truman's Fair Deal. Legislators did raise the legal minimum wage to 75 cents an hour. They also approved an important expansion of the Social Security system, increasing benefits by 75% and extending them to 10 million additional people. Congress also passed the National Housing Act of 1949, which provided for the construction of more than 800,000 units of low-income housing, accompanied by long-term rent subsidies. Congress refused, however, to pass national health insurance or to provide subsidies for farmers or federal aid for schools. In addition, legislators opposed Truman's efforts to enact civil rights legislation. Reading check. Describing, what was the impact of the election of 1948? The Eisenhower years. In 1950, the United States went to war in Korea. The war consumed the nation's attention and resources and basically ended Truman's Fair Deal. By 1952, with the war a bloody stalemate and his approval rating dropping quickly, Truman declined to run again for presidency. With no Democratic incumbent to face, Republicans pinned their hopes of regaining the White House on a popular World War II hero. The election of 1952. Dwight Eisenhower decided to run as the Republican nominee for president in 1952. His running mate was a young California senator, Richard Nixon. The Democrats nominated Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson, a witty and eloquent speaker who had the support of leading liberals and organized labor. The Republicans adopted the slogan, "It's time for a change." The warm and friendly Eisenhower, known as Ike, promised to end the war in Korea. "I like Ike" became the Republican rallying cry. Eisenhower's campaign soon came under fire as reports surfaced that Richard Nixon had received gifts from California business leaders totaling $18,000 while he was a senator. For a while, it looked as if Nixon might be dropped from the ticket. In a nationwide speech broadcast on radio and television, Nixon insisted the funds had been used for legitimate political purposes. He did admit that his family had kept one gift, a Cocker Spaniel puppy named Checkers. He declared, "The kids love the dog, and regardless about what they say about it, we're going to keep it." This so-called checker speech won praise from much of the public and kept Nixon on the ticket. Eisenhower won the election by a landslide, carrying the Electoral College 442 votes to 89. The Republicans also gained an 8-seat majority in the House, while the Senate became evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans. Ike as president. President Eisenhower had two favorite phrases. "Middle of the road" described his political beliefs, which fell midway between conservative and liberal. He also referred to the notion of dynamic conservatism, which meant balancing economic conservatism with some activism. Eisenhower wasted little time in showing his conservative side. The new president's cabinet appointments included several business leaders. Under their guidance, Eisenhower ended government price and rent controls, which many conservatives had viewed as unnecessary federal control over the business community. The Eisenhower administration viewed business growth as vital to the nation. The president's Secretary of Defense, formerly the president of General Motors, declared to the Senate that what is good for our country is good for General Motors, and vice versa. Eisenhower's conservatism showed itself in other ways as well. In an attempt to curb the federal budget, the president vetoed a school construction bill and agreed to slash government aid to public housing. Along with these cuts, he supported some modest tax reductions. Eisenhower also targeted the federal government's continuing aid to businesses, or what he termed creeping socialism. Shortly after taking office, the president abolished the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, or RFC, which since 1932 had lent money to banks, railroads, and other large institutions in financial trouble. Another Depression-era agency, the Tennessee Valley Authority, or TVA, also came under Eisenhower's economic scrutiny. During his presidency, appropriations for the TVA fell from $185 million to $12 million. In some areas, President Eisenhower took an activist role. For example, he advocated the passage of two large government projects. During the 1950s, as the number of Americans who owned cars increased, so too did the need for greater and more efficient travel routes. In 1956, Congress responded to this growing need by passing the Federal Highway Act, the largest public works program in American history. The act appropriated $25 billion for a 10-year effort to construct more than 40,000 miles or 64,400 kilometers of interstate highways. Congress also authorized construction of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway to connect the Great Lakes with the Atlantic Ocean through a series of locks on the St. Lawrence River. Three previous presidents had been unable to reach agreements with Canada to build this waterway to aid international shipping. Through Eisenhower's efforts, the two nations finally agreed on a plan to complete the project. Extending the New Deal. Although President Eisenhower cut federal spending and worked to limit the federal government's role in the nation's economy, he also agreed to extend the Social Security system to an additional 10 million people. He also extended unemployment compensation to an additional 4 million citizens and agreed to increase the minimum hourly wage from 75 cents to $1 and to continue to provide some government aid to farmers. By the time Eisenhower ran for a second term in 1956, a race he won easily, the nation had successfully completed the transition from a wartime to a peacetime economy. The battles between liberals and conservatives over whether to continue New Deal policies would continue. In the meantime, however, most Americans focused their energy on enjoying what had become a decade of tremendous prosperity. Reading check. Evaluating. What conservative and activist measures did Eisenhower take during his administration?